Mini episode 1702 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge 17th anniversary special here, the third of our three segments. This is FDH Managing Partner and original dignitary Rick Morris. I have the all-star panel here that we have used for our anniversary segments in recent years. Going around the table here, fellow FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway, who was there on January 14th, 07, when we got all started at the... Sports Talk Network. We started on the day that Marty Schottenheimer's coaching career ended. It was that game where the Chargers lost to New England. That was ending right as our show was beginning.
Why do you know that?
On that quiet winter, or quiet rainy day with the Sports Talk parking lot.
My memory is
Troy Brown playing defense knocked the ball out. It was another fumble.
Right. We were watching
Marty's demise.
Now, we didn't know at the time we were watching Marty's career end, but as the curtain was coming down on Marty Schottenheimer's career, the curtain was coming up on the FDH Lounge, and here we are 17 years later. Fellow FDH Lounge dignitaries, John Adams, Ron Glasnap, and dumbfounded that I remember that.
Marty Schottenheimer had to die for the FDH Lounge to live.
Well, there you go.
Something happened to him.
His career did, anyways. But and Marty lived many years longer, but the last
God
couple ones. Yeah,
the Sports Talk Network didn't, but Marty.
No.
Damn it.
We have long since survived that.
Someone still owes Matt $80.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well,
I need to go find him.
Good luck getting that back. And good luck, how's this for a segue? Good luck surviving in the world that we are in. This is our examination of news heading from 2023 to 2024, and probably the number one reason that we're doing this in the format that we're doing right now, because it seems like a time in the world, a changing of the calendar over that. I don't think it's recency bias to say. Chris might say maybe it's recency bias, I don't know, but it's like, I don't know that we've seen in our lifetimes a change of the calendar from one year into the other, where there's a lot of things looming, and a lot of them really of just a not-so-great to horrible kind of slant to them here. You could start wherever you want to start on this. As far as we talked about it in the first segment, we were talking about the state of entertainment right now, that, again, we really don't know, much like the entire time coming out of COVID, what's going to happen economically. There's been a looming sort of recession threat hanging for two and a half years now, and hasn't really happened yet, but you can't really say that things are going great. Like, consumer confidence is not high, but that's a thing where even as inflation has come down, people still are kind of feeling it. One of the big things, obviously, new wars keep popping up as other ones keep raging on. You've still got the Ukraine war that at any point in time, it seems like could spill over further in Europe with either Belarus or Poland or both. In the Middle East, the Israel-Hamas war has already spilled over, maybe not to like full-on hostilities, but if you're looking at the Red Sea potentially getting closed to shipping, as it has been at this point, and some of the other things, some of the other battlefields that seem to be moving forward in the Middle East, there seems to be at least a pretty decent chance of wider war and things that could really kind of screw the whole world economically, politically, militarily, and otherwise. And then that brings us to our own wonderful country, where you have an election matchup looming that, like, on the one sense, all polls indicate that nobody really wants, although if you get into the polls of each of the two parties, apparently it's what the partisans in each of the parties want. Could be the first time since 1948 that you have two relatively strong third-party candidates, so the potential for them to be spoilers. A lot of hot-button issues that are out there, a lot of unprecedented things as far as the context of the political race. So again, a lot of doom and gloom, I would say. And as the guy that was the resident dystopian in 2020, when we made our predictions for the 2020s, and I was the guy saying it was all going to go to crap in a lot of ways, I'm sort of the leader in the clubhouse on this. I didn't forecast a worldwide pandemic. I did forecast assassinations. That's one of the last things we haven't really seen yet, but
it might happen.
Could happen.
It might happen.
I mean, I know. A lot of times, Chris is sort of a counterpoint to my dystopian kind of views on things here. But I mean, it's hard to think that we're moving into a year that we would really feel great about.
Well, when you set out this list of what we were going to talk about,
potentially,
that's one of the things I wanted to get Chris's thoughts on is Trump and Biden. It's almost like nobody cares. It's almost like this is the washout election. Emails. Somebody wants somebody else.
Well, people care because they hate the other guy.
Right.
They're voting against the other guy.
But if you ask the average person, they want somebody else to step up. They don't want either of those candidates.
They don't want either, but they're going to get one.
So my thoughts was, I wanted to know Chris's thoughts on all that. Because Chris is the resident politician. He knows how that works.
And he's usually a sunnier counterpoint to me, so I'm really interested to hear.
I think what you're seeing in Trump and Biden, at least at this point, is the how both of the parties are broken in terms of the segments within them that control the levers, right? So you have Biden and Trump both having huge amounts of influence and control over their parties.
Money.
And so they... You're right that in some ways it's not even like a majority of their parties want them back.
Is it money?
But it's enough that they control enough of a plurality. In some ways, in Trump's case, that a majority of Republican activists, those involved in the process, are interested in seeing him again. It retards the entire system because they just have an iron grip on all of that. So we are, you know, barring some curveball in terms of health between two old men, is that more likely with one or the other? I don't know. Biden could fall down at any moment and Trump could have a heart attack, right? I mean,
right.
The guy that drinks 18 Diet Cokes a day?
The guy that couldn't walk down a ramp?
I think that we're probably heading towards that, unfortunately, unless, and I say this as a DeSantis delegate, we're heading towards that, unfortunately, although on the Republican side, I do think that there is the possibility of we getting into late summer and having to replace our nominee, that Trump becomes so wounded and so damaged that ultimately the party cannot move forward with it. But I don't even...
And I think we may be too far gone there. I don't know. I know they're almost, those two are like almost a perfect chaotic pair for each party.
Sure.
Because the words nothing inflames and activates the left more than the words Donald Trump. And they've kept his name in the news for the last 4 years.
And nothing more inflames the right than the words Joe Biden.
Or Kamala Harris.
Right.
True. But, well, the thing is that in looking at this, that, again, the seeming inevitability of this, and what we're going towards here, you know, as a guy who, you know, me personally, over the years, I got, and as somebody who has voted a third party in just about, aside from two, just every presidential election in the 21st century, except for 2004 and 2008, when I got scared enough about the other guy. But, so I'm a veteran third party voter at this point. And I've been a long proponent of getting it. I never thought I'd say, let's be more like Europe, but I do like the idea of more than two parties. And Chris, I know you've been more of a traditionalist in this sense. I mean, is there anything that's happening that's weakening your faith in the two-party system for all of the things that you're talking about here?
Well, my faith in the two-party system has been weakened ever since McCain-Feingold passed.
Okay.
And that's really the root cause of what's weakening the two-party system and
trying
to break down the republic. But all that being said, there is a possible scenario, too, where because Trump's organization in Iowa is a disaster, is a mess. Go figure, right?
Like, yeah.
Chaotic management? No way.
Yeah.
There is a real possibility that DeSantis wins Iowa, and then New Hampshire, with its allowing independents and others to spin into the primary, could push Haley forward there, because they won't match Iowa. So there is a scenario where DeSantis and Haley win the first two primaries. if that's the case, it would be really interesting to see how Trump flails about and what occurs then moving forward as we get into the big states. Like, is Trump going to carry California, New York? Because now we're getting into the delegate count.
Yeah, true.
Right? There are some big states that I don't think Trump's going to carry.
Right.
Down the line, if as long as it's not already fait accompli. So there are some scenarios where this does not work out for him.
Well, I want to focus in on the piece of the puzzle you were talking about with New Hampshire, because that is where what's happening in both parties is directly linked. Because to go back to this here, again, Biden in 2020, the one man that he most owed the nomination to was South Carolina Congressman Jim Clyburn. And what did he have to give back in return? South Carolina moves to the head of the process here on the Democratic side. But New Hampshire was like, not so fast, guys. You may not call it official, but we're going to have our thing anyways. So New Hampshire went rogue. And you have a Democratic congressman, Dean Phillips, who's running against Biden in New Hampshire. You have a lot of energy there.
Biden's not on the ballot.
He's not on the ballot. It's a write-in effort. And that's one of these things where you have a lot of folks out there that could otherwise swing to Nikki Haley, that see her as a more moderate component in the Republican Party. But the Democratic Party in New Hampshire is beating everybody over the head. You have to go write in Joe Biden, right? Because the history of things in New Hampshire, these could be great embarrassments for presidents.
That's kind of a problem, because for the average person, I'm going to call myself an average person. I'm not very intelligent in political conversation. But when you get to the point where, I don't know. I'm not Republican. I'm not Democrat. Third party.
You'd have people telling you to write
third
Joe
party.
Biden. Yeah.
They tell me Joe Biden. Yeah. They tell me Trump. Yeah. They tell me, and I'm sitting here thinking,
They're all bad.
Let me pick the best that I think is right.
Okay.
Why is it only those two that I get to choose?
That's what he's talking about.
Absolutely. That's what it comes down to. And I don't know what it was you said that so frustrated Anthony that he just punched the filing cabinet.
No, I wanted to say something.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to ask a question.
Okay.
And he stopped me.
Okay.
My question is, you say Biden's not on in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
But, you look at Colorado and they don't want Trump on the ballot.
That's a different matter. Trump is legally barred from the ballot. Joe Biden took himself out of the process in New Hampshire to appease the people in South Carolina.
But the question is, how does that stick? Does it stick? Well, does it hang in that Trump can't be on the ballot?
The Supreme Court's going to rule on it. My guess is because Trump hasn't lost any court cases related to January 6th. Every indication I've seen is that he's going to be restored to the ballot. I'll tell you this. I've already started to see here. They're opening up Pandora's box, because there are Republican governors now. They're talking about, Joe Biden should be off of the ballot because the southern border is completely open right now. Like, Republican governors will head up efforts in their states to take Biden off the ballot. And this is very dangerous territory. So we are looking at, I don't think it's going to stick. I think that's
bring
one of the reasons.
Third party.
What you're looking at is it's off for the primaries. So Haley
if Trump loses, he's off the ballot in the general election, and that's where it counts.
Right, but he's off right now for the primary. If he doesn't win, he's off for the primaries.
Right.
So that gives DeSantis or Haley or Christie or anybody a bigger push.
Well, it's only two states right now where he's off. I don't know if that's going to be a lingering story here. The thing with Biden, Biden took himself out of it in New Hampshire. He's going to have his cake and eat it too, because he's going to win.
Right.
The establishment there is going to push him over the top. But the thing is, the history of this, you go back to in 68 with LBJ, when Eugene McCarthy ran very strongly against him as an anti-war candidate. It was enough to help embarrass LBJ out of the race. 92, my guy, PJB, goes in there and puts enough of a hurting on George H.W. Bush that he was wounded coming out of there. So
PJB, who is that?
You can't. So
own it, please.
Yes.
You notice he threw initials.
I'm giving it the street name here. He's trying to
be like the kid.
Isn't the street name Buck Brigade?
Yeah, I can dumb it down for you.
Absolutely. Why not? Yeah.
So
it's a BW math.
That hurt George H.W. Bush. The prolonged challenge of Ronald Reagan in 76 doomed Gerald Ford, because that election was on a knife's edge by the time it was all over with. If Gerald Ford had a united Republican Party behind him, it wouldn't happen. So Dean Phillips can do a lot of damage to Biden if he scores. Supposedly him and his people are targeting 32-33%, whatever. He gets anything above that, it's a huge embarrassment to Biden. So that's a thing where you could look at it in New Hampshire under other circumstances. You'd have a lot of crossovers, in particular for Nikki Haley. And this is where the circumstances of the Democratic race are really working against her, because she could be getting a lot of crossovers here that aren't going to be there. Again, I don't, Chris, deny what you're saying about Iowa and Trump's operation there. And he did get beat, however narrowly, by Ted Cruz 8 years ago. So, I mean, all things are possible, but the polls don't seem to show that there's any kind of possibility at this point. I mean, DeSantis might have a groundswell coming his way. It'd be a lot easier if it was a one-on-one race, because Nikki Haley's not really doing anything in Iowa, but she's enough to be a spoiler. Chris Christie is enough to be a spoiler in New Hampshire. For the guy that says that he hates Trump more than anybody else won't get out
could
of the way.
Could end up getting Trump, yeah, through.
Yeah, he's going to be Trump's enforcer in New Hampshire if he doesn't get off the ballot. So there's the sense that these things will be over quickly, and they could be. But it's a thing where it's unprecedented territory. Like any kind of conviction with Trump, it wouldn't necessarily disqualify him from running. But I'm wondering the same things you are, Chris. We start to get into May, June, July. We're coming up like towards the conventions here. And the notion of Trump running from a convicted position here, for as much as people want to talk about, oh, he'll be president in an orange jumpsuit in the D.C. jail. No, that's not happening. Like that, they're going to find a way for that.
The Democrats want is for the Republican Party to foolishly nominate him. And then by about August, right after the convention, he's been criminally charged, but tried and found guilty under federal of felonies.
Yeah.
Federal crimes.
Yeah.
And therefore, all these states will remove him from the ballot. They don't have a nominee, and Joe Biden is elected president by fiat.
You're right.
That's exactly what
they're doing. That's what they want.
And we're playing right into it. Trump is running for president out of the desperate hope that he can elongate the process and then pardon himself. So the whole thing is all about Trump's criminal or convictions or not on both sides.
All right, let's get real weird with this then. In that kind of scenario, because I don't see the Republican Party even at that point unilaterally surrendering. Is it a thing where potentially, and you're looking at anybody else that's on the ballot,
would they swing to support Kennedy?
I was just about to say, does Kennedy, does
some would.
I think Kennedy's going to get a lot more than we think.
Well, here's the thing, Kennedy can't at that point in time become the Republican nominee because it will be set, whatever. But as far as the Republican Party essentially throwing its support behind him, he gets the massive endorsements and everything else like that. And Robert Kennedy is the de facto Republican presidential candidate, even though he differs in a lot of ways from the Republicans that are now becoming more clear.
By about 90%.
Yeah, a lot of it. People way overestimated what he had in common with the Republicans. You and I knew better, but
well, it was just the loony conspiracy theory MAGA components.
Yeah, basically the conspiracy people.
This has nothing to do with Republicanism or conservatism or otherwise. I mean,
but do they swing to Kennedy? They'll do that rather than just hand it to Biden. I would predict that.
Well, that's possible. Anyway, that
okay.
I guess the problem with all of this is the more likely scenario is we end up with Biden and Trump.
Okay. Yeah.
Two.
Ugh.
Sadly.
But there are some possibilities out there for wild card scenarios for things to get off the rails.
Potentially.
The
yeah.
Patron Morris ticket. Let's do it.
better be known by my name on top. No,
Anthony Prez. Yeah. Anthony Prez.
I'm not Anthony on the other side of anybody. But
Anthony Prez.
Well, the other thing here, too, to bring this thing all the way around then in our discussion. What is the biggest wild card out there for any of this type stuff? Potential economic calamity. I mean, we saw it in the spring with the banks. We narrowly kind of avoided that there. There's talk that there could still be some vulnerabilities, but by far, war. If war spills over, if it's a big war in the Middle East, if it spreads to basically other theaters kind of from there, and you're seeing this kind of thing where, again, for as much as I've always been from the realist school of things, you know, at this point, you've got even a guy like me saying, okay, Putin, China, Hamas, what, like, there is this coalescing there.
I don't think there's going to be a broader war in the Middle East. All those parties involved have too much to lose.
Okay.
They could rush to Hamas's defense now. They knock me over with the great rush to support Hamas. Even Iran, at the end of last week, the Ayatollah was telling the military, well, stop attacking American interests in Iraq. We need to have a strategic thoughtfulness and pause to what we're doing.
Okay.
Because, and the reality is, at the end of the day, whether you're the wealthy Saudis or you're the Khomeini in Iran, there's too much to lose.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that ultimately becomes the thing that keeps all these people in check, is that their political power and their party, their money, their dachas, or whatever the equivalent is you call it, they're not willing to risk it. They're just not. You're seeing that with Belarus. I mean, they are a complete bought and paid for Putin satellite, but Poroshenko's doing everything he can to sort of puff out his chest and talk a big game and then not get involved in it, right?
Right.
You know, he's allowed a few things, but he's tried really, because he knows the minute they're involved, he has internal problems with potential civil war. The people that he lost the election, right? The last election. So he has his own internal problems. He's not interested, right? Now, you have wild card scenarios where Putin's transferred nuclear weapons to Belarus, some different things.
Well,
China's situation with Taiwan, China has tons of internal problems. The issue will be, what does Xi decide to do? Does a shooting war over Taiwan make sense because of his internal problems? Or is there too much, to lose?
Right. Well,
and I think that right now is the driving thing that's kind of containing everything. Now, that doesn't mean that Ukraine doesn't score a victory on the battlefield, somebody panics, there's a tactical nuke, there's some expansion. Those things are always possibilities. Don't forget, in 2014, I predicted that Putin would use a nuke by 2024. So I'm running out of
rope. You may not be far off.
Please be wrong.
I have it on the Twitter.
I hope we all hope you're wrong.
I hope you're wrong.
So I'm running out of time on that prediction. Look, 2024 is definitely fraught with a lot of peril.
Yeah.
As I think you are trying to sort of...
not fearmonger, but just put it out there.
I mean, both economically, although I don't think that that's really in the cards yet. But
dig your basement deeper.
There is definitely some economic challenges ahead. There are definitely some international order challenges ahead. Does that mean there'll be war? Not necessarily. The reality is nobody really wants war. I mean, they don't. Yeah. I mean, even Russia's restraining itself to a large degree.
Agreed.
So it's like, you know, what does that restraint continue through 24? That's the most likely outcome.
Right.
Are there scenarios where something goes wrong, mistakes are made, and things occur? Absolutely could happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And there are terrorist elements in different places that have a stake in trying to raise the things here.
Well, that's what October 6th was, October 7th for Hamas.
Right.
We were getting more and more close to normalization. Look at all the Abraham Accords. Mm-hmm. Israel was normalizing relations, economic relations.
Yeah.
If they could see that they were losing their grip on the narrative, and that was why they launched that, to try to pull the Middle East back into chaos.
Yep. Yeah. So that could happen, but on a bigger scale. The one thing is, when we're talking about Taiwan, the good thing is, if Rick Morris knows this, then President Xi, Dictator Xi, knows this also. That's the good thing, is that this is something that I had heard about, the thing with Taiwan. What's the first thing what Taiwan does if they get invaded? They fire some of these big-ass screens.
Oh, no!
Oh, no, get rid of General So!
General So. Cut General So shit coming in.
Well, the first thing they're going to do is make a funny animation video about it, because that's always the first thing they do. But the second thing they're going to do is fire a bunch of missiles that we gave them right at the Three Gorges Dam.
Right.
And flood the entire part of what Eastern China, whereupon they get nuked, and whereupon Shiznit really gets real.
And that's the thing with Chris saying Putin with a nuke in 24. How long does Putin wait? How frustrated does he get with this war? Because he wanted to go in, take over, be done. How frustrated does he get?
You know what, though, bro? It's all about the expectations game. 2 years ago, he would have been really frustrated by where it's at now. Mm-hmm. Looking at where it went in the last year, the fact that Ukraine has not been able to push them out. Right now, I think he likes his chances a little better. Our country is wavering on giving him a...
That's what he's playing the long game.
He is.
He can continue to throw hundreds of thousands of his people into a meat grinder to die and buy time for the West to finally just give up interest.
Well... And again, and this is where we're like, you know, between me and Chris, who don't always necessarily agree.
Why I don't live there.
Chris and I don't always agree on every last thing on foreign policy. You know, me being in the realist camp, but there are a lot of things we're seeing eye to eye on these days. And it's a thing where you've got in the Republican primaries this Ramaswamy guy mainstreaming the idea of breaking up NATO. So you've got a situation now where that's on the table, and the Overton window, I think, is shifting here amongst the Republicans. So, again, you could see a situation where, I mean, if Trump basically pulls us out of NATO, there is no more NATO. And
I don't see that occurring. I don't, because that Russia, that might have been the case if Russia hadn't done what they did.
But even in spite of that, though, there is, if the deal could come together where the Republicans get the greater border security in exchange for Ukraine aid, that'll be the real test of where it's going. Because if the Republicans stay militantly anti-Ukraine aid, then, yeah. I mean,
well, here's the thing. It's a segment of Republicans. Majority of Republicans in Congress have voted to put aid forward. You poll Republicans in the public, a majority of them support aid. So this whole idea that Republicans are against aid, yeah. There's that 35-38% that's vocal and militant about stopping it. But the fact of the matter has been Republicans have voted in Congress to push it, and Republican voters and polls have said they support it. So, yeah, there is a segment that's ultra-MAGA that is bought into this as a narrative, but most of the Republican Party and most Republican voters have not.
That segment controls the House leadership, though. That's the thing. Right. That's a very key. Maybe not the Senate leadership because of McConnell, but they control the House leadership.
Sure.
So it's all about who in what places believes that, and who's getting swayed by that. So, again...
Ultimately, I think even if the U.S. pulled out of NATO, I believe NATO would continue to exist. I think what you would see is Poland take the lead role in NATO.
Yeah.
Because Poland has been progressively building up their military. They are going to be the military might and economic might in Europe in the second half of this century.
I do agree.
So
that's interesting, because I've heard... Yeah,
they're going to be the key player, not Germany, not England, not France. It's going to be Poland, and they are obviously very, 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 very anti-Russia.
I hadn't heard that part before. I am partisanly in favor of that as somebody with some Polish extraction in me, VA Poland. But I agree with you, too, on further reflection. There will still be a NATO, even if we're not in it. It won't be worth much of anything. But you're right. They're not going to lay out the welcome mat for, you know, Vlad's tanks to come in. They're going to try and do something, even if we pull out. But so, again, war, bad election choices, a lot of looming, you know, black clouds coming into this year. Anybody got anything else on this or any kind of dissenting positive kind of view why things aren't so bad?
I'm not going to comment on whether I think things are bad. I think there's always a temptation to fall into, and it's just outlook. I think I can tell you I'm going to try to live at a different frequency with perspective and, you know, try to not live vicariously through either, you know, superstars like we talked about in the first segment, or politics, as we're talking now. And I think there's a stability to be had in common ground, and whether it's grounded in your spirituality or faith or God or whatever, I think it's just an outlook. I guess it's just a choice. And I would encourage others to consider not falling into, and I think you have to live with some awareness. Certainly you can be aware of what's happening globally.
Yeah.
But I don't think you should you certainly can't control it. I guess it's an attitude about being present where you are and controlling what you can control.
I think that's well said. I think that people would be well served by not creating who they are as a person, intertwining who they are in terms of their personality and their self-worth in the outcome of elections.
Yeah.
That is, we've seen this sort of sportsification of politics to the extreme in the last decade. That is just, it's gotten extremely unhealthy.
Yeah.
Why people feel, why we're more divided and more at each other's throats is because, you know, who's got the red jersey on and the blue jersey on, and it doesn't matter what they do, and I'm consuming it 24/7 on Fox News and Twitter, and placing myself only in an echo chamber, and if we lose this election, my God, the sky is falling, the country is coming to an end, and both sides are guilty of it, mm-hmm. and yet the economy moves forward, mm-hmm. human mm-hmm. progress moves forward, mm-hmm. medicine advances, you know, technology advances, quality of life improves, mm-hmm. despite all the gloom and doom, to your
right.
point.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
people were to live in the moment and enjoy what they have, their families, their faith, their friends, they would be a lot happier than worrying about what some moron in Washington, D.C. has to say on right. a news segment.
So I want to tell you,
humanprogress.org, baby.
I had a horrible day the other day, and I know Ricky heard no end of it about the horrible day I had. The next day I walked into work and a guy looked at me and said, I'm going to smile today. And I'm not going to lose that smile because you don't mean enough to take that smile from me. And I thought, you know, if more of us lived like that,
yeah.
it would be a better world.
Do that. And that's where, and I very much appreciate this, as with everything else here. Some useful tools for living out of our crew at the end of this thing. Yeah, don't let all these things that, and again, I'm as guilty as anybody, and, you know, I doom text Chris all the time. I doom texted him about the Iran bombing here, and here we go. So, you know, I'm as guilty as anybody else on that stuff, but can't let this stuff get to you. And
I would do one caveat to that.
What?
Never stop hating Steelers. that's an allowable.
I mean, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. We can still do that, and we'll have plenty of reasons to do that in the time ahead. And again, can't thank this great panel enough. Chris Galloway, John Adams, Ron Glasnap, Anthony and Matt Petrone. We've done this a couple times in recent years for the FDH Lounge to celebrate the anniversaries here. And again, I truly appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, everybody out there, for checking out our 17th anniversary celebration mini episodes.